Right, good evening. So we are, it's Yud Gimel Tammuz today, which is part of the 12th, 13th of Tammuz celebration of the previous Rebbe being released miraculously in Russia in 1927. And it was on that day, it was actually on a Monday, of this week, the 12th of Tammuz, like yesterday, in 1965, that this discourse was said, and it was the same center of the week, Balak, and it moves on the verse, Mi mana afa Yaakov. Now we have that in the English text of the Hebrew English text of the Torah, at the bottom, verse 10, it's Balaam, the heathen prophet who has been hired by Balak to curse the Jewish people, and instead of that, blessings are coming out of his mouth. And he says, Mi mana afa Yaakov, verse 10, who counted the dust of Yaakov? Maybe let's just go a line earlier, verse 9. Ki mirosh tzurim erenu. From the top of the peaks, I see it. I see this nation. Umigvaot ashurenu, and from the hilltops, I gaze at it. Hein am levadad yishkon. Behold, this people dwells alone. Uvagoyim lo yitchashav, and it's not counted among nations. It's always singular. It's always different. Mi mana afa Yaakov. Who can count the dust of Jacob? Umispar et rova Yisrael, or can count his, now he translates it here, Ari Kaplan, the hordes of Yisrael. It means like the offspring of Israel. Tamut nafshi mot yisharim, let my soul die the death of the just. Utihi achariti kamor, and let my end be like his, like Israel's. So that's part of a long extended passages, a string of passages where passage by passage Balaam gives a blessing to the Jewish people instead of a curse. And so that functions as the window on the Sedra. This biblical verse opens the discussion, which we're then going to explore in the actual discourse. And we'll have the Maimah melody in order to help us to understand the beautiful teachings contained therein. Oh, ya, 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 yo, ya, 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 yo, yo. Ya 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 ma yo bambo ya ira damba ya ira damba yo ha yo ya ira damba ya ya ho ya ira damba ya mba ho ya ira damba ira damba ho ya mba ira dam ha ha ya ya ira damba ho ya ya ho ya ya yo. Right, so here we are with the discourse of 1965, Monday the 12th of Tammuz. Mi mana afa Yaakov, who can count the dust of Jacob, umispar et rova Yisrael, or give a figure to the hordes, to the offspring of Israel? And the Rebbe asks, v'tzarich lavin. Now we have to understand this. And in the footnote, it gives a reference to a section of a discourse by the 5th Lubavitcher Rebbe, the Rebbe Rashab. As we have often mentioned, many of the Rebbe's discourses are focused on a passage in his extremely profound and extensive Hasidic discussions. Now, Masha Katuv Zen Nechlak Lishneyan Yanim. This verse seems to be divided in two parts. In Yanechat Shekashuim Yaakov, one part is talking about Jacob. Vinyana Sheni Shekashuim Yisrael. And the second part is relating to Israel, right? So we've got on that first line at the top, who counts the dust of Jacob and gives a number to the hordes of Israel. So Jacob and Israel. Now Jacob and Israel are the same person. Yeah. Jacob's name was changed to Israel. But very often in Hasidic thought particularly, we find a kind of counterpoint between the two names, which he's going to elaborate in a moment. Gam tzarich lavin, we also have to understand, madua ne'ma u'mispar, why does it say a number in the second part of the verse? Hari ha'perush ha'pashut v'katuv, the simple understanding of this verse, who? Mi is, mi yachol imnot et hafa Yaakov, who is able to count the dust of Jacob? U'mi yachol imnot et rova Yisrael, who can count the hordes of Israel? Shahatevot mi mana, that the words mi mana, who can count, kai gama rova Yisrael, also apply to the second part of the verse, the hordes of Israel. Vahainu, that means shekavanat hakatuv ladgish she'ein mispa. What the verse is trying to emphasize is that there's not a number. So why does it say that there is a number? The imkein havelei lemeima, it should have said in brief, bekitzur, mi mana afa Yaakov rova Yisrael. It could have just said, who can count the dust of Jacob in the hordes of Israel? So why does it have to add in v'lama neima umisba et rova Yisrael? Why does it add this word, the number of the hordes of Israel? V'gam tzarich laven, we also have to understand ma shekatuv b'midrash Rabba, an intriguing statement in the midrash on Shir Hashirim, on Song of Songs. Ala pasuk, on the verse, El ginate goz yoradati. So speaking about this verse, that I went down to the nut garden. Ma egoz zeh. Now, this is what the Midrash says. Consider a nut. Hasak male egozim biyadcha. You've got a bag full of nuts in your hand. Ata noten letocho kama shumshumim, kama chadalim, vehin machzikim. You add to this some sesame and some mustard, and it makes it stronger. Kach kama geirim ba'u v'nitavsu b'Yisrael. Thus, many proselytes came and joined to the Jewish people. Hodehu dichtiv, and that's what it says, mi mana afa Yaakov, who can count the dust of Jacob? So in other words, the dust of Jacob is the nuts, the sesame, the mustard seed all together, so it's not only the Jewish people and their own descendants, their own original descendants, it's also the Gerim, Gerei Tzedek, who have added to the Jewish people, which make it stronger, says the Midrash. The L'chora Eina Muvan, now, what does this mean, asked the Rebbe, Ma Shaych Inyan Hosafat Gerim L'Perush HaKatuv. How is it that the addition of the Gerim relates to the verse Mimana Afa Yaakov, to the idea of the dust of Jacob? All right, so that's a collection of questions, and it's a long discourse. I'm not sure we'll get to the end with all the questions, but let's see how far we go. Now, first of all, in section Bet, we start with the difference between Yaakov and Yisrael. We'll understand this by considering the difference between Jacob and Israel. Now, why is he called Yaakov? Because when he was a little baby and he was born, his hand was holding the heel of his older brother Esau. As he came out, he was holding the heel of Esau. So this suggests something low. The heel is the low part of the body. V'Yisrael, where is the term Yisrael? Later on, Jacob wrestled with the angel, and the angel told him his name would be called Israel because you wrestled with gods and with men. With gods meaning with angels. And that's an exalted level. And therefore we find in the Torah that Yaakov hu Hashem shebo nekra'im b'nei Yisrael al derech haragil. The word Jacob is what the Jewish people are called normally. Ma she'en ken Yisrael, whereas Israel, hu Hashem shemoreh al shleimut, that's a name which indicates wholeness. וכשם שהדברים הם אומרים בנגיע לכללת התרומה השלמה דחו בני ישראל, and just as that applies to the totality of the whole Jewish people, כן הוא גם בכל אחד מישראל. So it is in the, every individual Jewish man and woman, בכל נשמה, with each soul. שישנו חלק הנשמה שנקרא בשם יעקב, there's one part of the soul called Jacob, יעקב, שזהו העקב והרגל שבנשמה, that's the heel, the foot of the soul. וישנו גם חלק הנשמה, and there's also the part of the soul over the page, שנקרא בשם ישראל, which is called Israel. And the word Yisrael are the letters otiyot li rosh. I have a head. The word li rosh is the same as it's an anagram of Yisrael. Shezeh harosh sheben neshama. That is the head of the soul. Now we now launch into a very very beautiful concept, putting together the days of the week and Shabbat. Line 2 on page Vav. Similarly, there's a difference with every soul, each individual soul, taking the soul as a whole for the moment, comparing the weekdays to Shabbat. As explained at length in Likutei Torah on this Sedra, where it's explaining Beperusha Katu, where it's explaining the verse, Lo hibit aven beYaakov, God didn't see any iniquity in Yaakov. V'lo ra'a amal b'Yisrael, he didn't see any work, any heavy work in Yisrael. Shelo hibit aven beYaakov, he didn't see any iniquity in Jacob. Kayal yimei achol, that's the weekdays. Shebehem yesh inyan b'mamelacha, then there's the idea of work. Kamo shekatuv, as it's written, sheshet yamim teyaseh melacha, for 6 days work should be done. And we work, v'lametet melachot du'uvdim b'chol, with the 39 kinds of work that we're not allowed to do on Shabbat. Well, during the week we do it, that's our work. Sheoskim b'inyanei olam, we're involved with worldly matters. Olam hazeh tachton, this lower world. She'in tachton lamateh menu, and there's nothing lower than this world. And here we are working. Uvemela, and automatically, obviously, nimtzayim b'madregash nichet b'shem akev aregel. And since we're working in this low world, we're on the level which is called the heel and the foot, and that's why we're called Yaakov. Ele shebo nimshechet hanshama. However, the soul flows into this lower level of the foot or the heel. Uvanshama gufa, and in the soul itself, nimshach hayud milamayla. The yud flows from above, v'chodeh ad ha'ekev, and it penetrates down to the heel. Okay, let's just try and see this graphically. We have the word Yaakov. You see, there's the yud, and then we have the akev. So the akev is the heel, and it's the yud which flows into the heel. So that is, in the soul, it's like the higher part of the soul, which is flowing down into the lower part of the soul. So it's as if the word Yaakov, Jacob, which this spells, is like saying that there is something very high, the Yud. The reason why the Yud is very high is because it's the first letter of the name Yudke Vavke. But that impregnates the entire soul right down to the heel of the soul. So our heel of the soul is involved in the material affairs of this world, working in the 6 days of the week. And nonetheless, the soul flows down and informs the heel of the soul, the yud of the soul, the head of the soul, flows down into the heel. Line 13. Shezeu inyan Yaakov, that's what Yaakov is, yud akev, the yud and the heel. ובכוח זה הריהו ממלא ענייני שליחותו בעלמדין. It's with this power that we are at the same time involved with worldly things, but we're also getting an infusion from the exalted level of the Yud, the exalted Yud. That's how we fulfill our mission, our task in this world. Very beautiful concept in itself, because there's a temptation, in theory, for a person of spiritual sensitivity to want to withdraw from the world and not to get their hands dirty and not to be involved with worldly affairs. and just be in a sort of sacred realm of holiness the entire time.
It's very tempting.
So here the discourse is telling us that what we have to do is try to go down and be in the world where there are all kinds of temptations and challenges, and nonetheless also hopefully to be able to experience the flow of the Yud, which flows down into us at the same time. So it means right, you know, when you put it like that, you see immediately that as individuals, for that matter as a nation as a whole, but let's just consider the individual, we are a bundle of contrasts and of paradoxical opposites, because at the same time there is this earthly dimension and there's also the spiritual dimension, which are intended to go together. And we shouldn't try to retreat from either of the two sides. We shouldn't lose ourselves in the materiality, but we also shouldn't retreat from the materiality. So
it's what Chevy said to me when Kimmel Tammuz. It was just amazing, Kingsley Way, like the Nigunim, and then the mimer we did with you there. And I was like, oh wow, it's amazing, it's amazing. And Chevy was like, you know, the important thing is, though, to come back down to earth. And she says that's what Hasidus is, not like floating off to Axilus, but coming back down afterwards.
Right, that's a very good point. Yeah. All right, so line 14. U'b'choach zen, with this power, I just read that. So with this power, we fulfill our shlichut in the world, our mission in the world. Omnam, line 15. However, avodazu hi beofen shel amal v'yegia. This kind of work is actually, it's a lot of work. It's effort. We're talking about things that we do during the week. Ele shamelacha tzricha liot lela'aven. We should be doing this work without sin. So while working with a material world full of challenges and temptations, unfortunately, it's quite easy to fall into some kind of iniquity or the other, maybe only on the level of thought, but we have to be careful about that. V'zeo lo hibit aven b'Yaakov. And that's why it says God did not see any iniquity in Jacob. Aval adayin ein ze ba'ofen shelo ra'ama. But it doesn't say he didn't see any work, because we were working. We're working in the days of the week. But then we come to Shabbat. So this changeover is on line 19. Through the service of the days of the week, ba'im le'yom ha-Shabbat, we come to the day of Shabbat. K'may marabotenu zalas, the sages tell us, mi shetarach be'erev Shabbat yochal be'Shabbat, someone who makes an effort on the eve of Shabbat will eat on Shabbat. Now, the simple meaning of that is simple practicalities. In order to eat on Shabbat in a proper way, you have to somehow or other organize food that you, through working during the week, and then on Erev Shabbat you organize your home and a Shabbat stove and things like that, and you put on an urn and a chalon and kugel, whatever it might be, and in that way you now have the food that you are able to eat for Shabbat. But the spiritual sense is that through the spiritual effort during the week, we then are able to have a Shabbat, which really means something. Now, Shabbat, shehu yom menucha, Shabbat is a day of rest. Ba'asur b'melacha, when we are forbidden to work. V'lechein ein bo netinat makom l'inyan shel amal. And so therefore, we don't have the idea of amal. Now, amal is an ambiguous word. It doesn't only mean work. It means pain. It's like a negative
toil.
That's a very good, thank you, very good translation. So it's toil. It's that the person is working, but this working is really difficult and desperate. So Shabbat, so the thing is that in the days of the week we may have toil. Sometimes it does happen, Sugazun, that we have toil. Sugazun. We hope that there's no iniquity in the days of the week. But when it comes to Shabbat, there's no toil either. That's the second part of the verse. He didn't see toil in Israel. Since on Shabbat, the whole style of behavior, of thinking, of feeling, has to be in a completely different way. Lachain, therefore, for men, the transition from the weekday to Shabbat for Hasidim, and to a certain extent non-Hasidim as well, it's like a custom that's, I think, increasingly becoming popular, who al yedei hatvila be'erev Shabbat, is by going to the mikveh on the eve of Shabbat. Shehu inyan habitul, that is, over the page, Zion, that is bitul. Now, bitul means self, means abnegation, usually in this sense, self-abnegation. And going to the mikveh, tefillah, otiyot habitul, and when we look at the word for dipping, tefillah, dipping in the mikveh, it's the same letters as the word habitul, abnegation. So, hainu, shemitbatel tziyur adam, the image, the structure of the man is dissolved, kafi shehu bimei hachol, as it is during the weekdays, v'naaset tziyur chadash, and it becomes a new image, hamatim liyom haShabbat, fitting for the Shabbat day. So that beautiful point of transformation, where suddenly the whole atmosphere, as it were, of the week is washed away, and one enters the mikveh, and one's weekday self is dissolved, and one emerges with a new Shabbat self.
Oh, that's a nice idea.
Yeah, it is. V'hainu, and that means shekeshem she'inyan haShabbat ba'olam kulo, just as the concept of Shabbat generally in the world, Huba often is in the way, as we see from the verse in the Torah about Shabbat, the beginning of the Torah, Vayechulu Hashemayim Ba'aretz V'chol Tzva'on, that the heaven and the earth and all the hosts were complete. The Perish Vayechulu, now there's a number of ways of looking at this word Vayechulu, and one of the ways of understanding it is not complete, Hu Gam L'shon Kilion. Kilion means something which expires, which disappears, which dissolves. Kafi shemavai hatzemach tzedek ba'aruka ba'or haTorah, as the third Lubavitcher Rebbe, the Tzemach Tzedek, explains at length in his book, that vayuchulu means the world expires physically, doesn't mean it disappears, but it's transformed into the world of Shabbat. And that's the vayuchulu. Hainu shenaaseh kilyon detziyah olamot, the structure of the worlds, are they spiritually expire. The word expire here is like King David saying in Psalms, my soul thirsts for you, I'm expiring for you. Like a sense of yearning and longing and dissolving in God. Kafi shehem b'yemei hachol, so their structure, the way they are in the week, dissolves away. And then the worlds take on a new aspect, the way they are on Shabbat.
I just asked the Kilayon, or is it with Eov, or one of the Nevi'im, they planted?
No, that's Kikayon.
A Kikayon.
Okay. That's sounds similar. Yeah, that's the
Castor.
Castor, yes, is that what it is? Okay. Prosaic. Okay. So there's this beautiful image of the whole structure of the world's changing from the week to Shabbat from the individual point of view. Hinekenu gam b'chol echad m'Yisrael. Now that is so for every Jewish man and woman. It might not be the woman who goes to the mikveh on Erev Shabbat specifically, but There is this sense of transition. She is, in a sense, the queen of Shabbat, and the radiance of Shabbat fills the woman in a most wonderful way when it comes to Shabbat. And we say Eshet Chayil, which is about the woman of valor, which is about the Shekhinah and about the human woman, the wife, the woman in the house. So that is the quality that is there for every Jew. Shal yedei avodato b'imot hachol, through his or her effort in the weekday, that heaven and earth, they are transformed. That the world comes to the situation of the Shabbat day, Sha'az hu ba'ofen shel shleimut, and then it achieves wholeness. V'lo ba'ofen shehaya olam chaser, not in the way that the world was lacking something. The sages tell us that when the world was created, it was lacking something. And man and woman, we have to make an effort in order to repair the world, as it were. Whereas, and complete the world. Whereas when it comes to Shabbat, then the world is complete. As mentioned earlier, and in order to get to that, one needs selflessness first, which is here typified by a man going to the mikveh, and spiritually is for every person, whether or not they go to the mikveh, is the idea of the transition from Friday, the days of the week, coming into Shabbat. Now, as we know, Shabbat is Me'ein Olam Haba, is a little bit like the world to come, which is the reward for all the effort that a person put in this world. So now the discourse is switching from our earthly world and the days of the week and Shabbat to consider concepts relating to the Garden of Eden. So that's section Gimel. Now this will be understood in more detail from what we find regarding reward, and that's the concept of Gan Eden, the Garden of Eden. Shabbat tzadikim yoshvim b'ne'anin meziv hashkina. In Gan Eden, in the Garden of Eden, the tzadikim, and the whole Jewish people are considered tzadikim, the tzaddikim sit and enjoy the radiance of the divine presence, the Shechina. Shezeu schar avoda, and that is the reward for the effort that they made. Umezeh yuvan gam benogel inyan avodan. From this we can understand also concerning that effort. So by considering the reward, you understand what is the real nature of the effort. Uvahakdim, considering first, just as the idea of the effort that we make has to be, as it says in the Shema, you should love God with all your heart and all your soul and all your might. And what does it mean with all your might? That means the fullness of service of God is when it's got no limits. But often the Mailin Bakodesh Adein Sof, climbing higher and higher in holiness without end. That's a very dramatic demand. And it is the kind of demand that the Rebbe himself very much presented to people, that however much a person had achieved in one way or the other, whatever field, whatever area, the Rebbe would always say, you know, and now, next. never the idea of, like, you know, just sitting back and enjoying.
Chilling out.
Well, sometimes you have to chill.
The Rebbe never chilled out, though, did
he? The Rebbe didn't chill out. No. No. No, but when you're teaching in the school, children have break and they have to have fun, and you know, you have learning, you go on, you make trips for children, summer camps now around the whole world, there are summer camps for children, different places, and soon they'll be here as well when the school holidays begin. So the kids go on trips, they do fun things, and at the same time they have a learning program and they daven. It's a combination of the spiritual and also chilling out. So the things, the chilling out, shouldn't be something separate.
Right.
It doesn't take you over a wall. It's on the same side as holiness. Okay. But that within Kedusha, within holiness, there are moments of chilling. But, and that is reculer pour mieux sauter, stepping back in order to jump even higher. And so there always has to be a greater effort. And sometimes it's an effort which is easy to measure. You know, a little boy can tell you that he learned 10 Mishnahs by heart, or wow. 20 Mishnahs, or a little girl, you know, 20 Mishnahs by heart. That's like in our school, the girls have every year a whole thing of learning Pirkei Avot by heart, and then there are some girls who learn the entire thing. So, and the idea is always going further. So the reward of the Garden of Eden, just as the work in order to get the reward is a work, is an effort which has no limit, so the reward of the Garden of Eden is also is a sense going higher and higher limitlessly. So the soul in the Garden of Eden goes higher and higher. That's why when it's a yard site, the custom is you say to someone, you know, may the soul of whoever it is who is passed away on that yotzah, may it have an aliyah, may it go higher. The idea that every year on the day of the yotzah it's going higher and higher, the same way that when it left the world originally, the soul left on that day when it passed away, which was very tragic to everyone around the soul, but for the soul it means it's released from this physical world and it's entering a spiritual realm. So every year that's an opportune moment to go even higher. Now that's a very interesting interpretation he's giving here, which is in the Amidah. Holy ones every day praise you. Now, who are the holy ones? Here it says, the Kae al Aliyat Hanashamot. This means souls, Shenikraot Kedoshim, which are called holy ones, Began Eden, in the Garden of Eden, Al Yedea Hilul, Yahalalucha, through their praising of God, they go higher. Shuhu in Yana Shira, we're getting a whole dramatic image of what it's like in the Garden of Eden after 180 years. So that is the idea of the song, melody, Sha'al Yada, through which he Aliya, there is the ascent, Teich Chet. Kayadua b'inyan, as is known right at the beginning of the Hasidic movement, the Hasidim are very enthusiastic about song. So they quote the statement in the Mishnah. The Mishnah is talking about animals, what animals can carry on Shabbat. Animals also have to keep Shabbat in some sense. In the Ten Commandments, when it's speaking about Shabbat, it says, you and your maidservant and your manservant, maidservant, and animals. So animals also have to keep Shabbat. So you can't let an animal work for you on Shabbat. So it also has to rest. So then comes the question, now what constitutes rest for an animal? What about wearing a halter? Wearing a halter around the neck of a cow, for example. Now is the cow able to walk in the street wearing a halter? Isn't that carried? So it says, Kol Bale Hashir Yotzim Bashir. Anything that normally wears a halter can go out with a halter. You don't have to worry about it. But the word shir means halter and it also means song. So the Hasidim said, you know what that means? That through song you can go out, you can go up, you can leave the physical dimension and achieve something spiritual. So by means of song you can go to a higher level from the physical to the spiritual. And similarly, what the Rebbe is saying here, once you're in a spiritual realm after 180 years, in Gan Eden, it is through song that we go from a lower level to a higher level, and from a higher level to even higher. And that is the praising of God. And so that's what it means in this blessing, in the Amidah. It's very beautiful, and it affects the way in which we understand what the Amidah is about. So here we have, Ata Kadosh, you are holy, V'shimcha Kadosh, and your name is holy, U'kadoshim b'chol yom yahalalucha sela, and the holy ones, meaning souls, the neshamot, every day praise you, and by praising you, by singing, they are going higher. So there's this image of the Garden of Eden where these souls are singing to God and as a result going higher and higher.
Wow.
These souls are the ones of people who have passed on.
Yeah.
It's not angels.
Well, the normal way people understand this is that it's talking about angels. But here, the Rebbe is presenting a different way of understanding it, that it's talking about soul. Yeah. And this ascent, line 2, Shazel Bli Hefsik, this is without limit, without interruption. Selah, as we say, Yahalucha Selah. Now, the word Selah, as our sages put it in the Talmud, kol makom shenema netzach sela ve'ed, there are these words which in Hebrew they sort of signify eternity, forever. Netzach is eternity, ve'ed forever, sela means, you know, without end. So whenever it says that, which it very often says in Tehillim particularly, Ein lo hefsek olam, it has no, it's never interrupted, it's always going on, ad ein sof, infinitely. So there is always this ascent taking place.
So there's constant movement. It's yes. Never at rest.
Never at rest. Yes. The Talmud says, for the tzaddikim, there is no rest in the other world, because they're all the time climbing higher and higher.
Oh, okay.
Elu sha'aliyot elu, but these ascents, nechlakot lishnei sugim klalim, they are divided into two general types. Now here we come to a kind of Kabbalistic concept about the Garden of Eden, that there are many levels of the Garden of Eden. Gan Eden ha-tachton, the lower Garden of Eden, v'gan Eden ha-elyon, and the higher Garden of Eden. So there's like infinite levels within each one, and in general you can talk about the lower garden and the higher garden. V'hine aliyah mimadriga lemadriga bepratei madrigot leGan Eden. Now the ascent from one level to another, when one is going from one level of the Garden of Eden to a higher level, ubichlalut yoter, and putting it in more general terms, ha'aliyah miGan Eden atachton, if one is going from the lower Garden of Eden leGan Eden elyon to the higher Garden of Eden. He al yidei ha'amud shebeinayim. The Kabbalah speaks about a kind of a pillar in between, which is the way the soul ascends. Obviously a spiritual thing. The soul ascends to a higher level. Tzuguzum. V'chein, so there's this concept of the pillar. And the pillar represents a kind of selflessness. And through the achieving selflessness at this level, the soul ascends to a higher level. Now there's a river Dinur. Now Dinur means of fire. So like a river of fire. In which the souls dip. And through this, they are, in a sense, dissolved away. They reach a level of abnegation. As mentioned previously, that dipping in the mikveh is like selflessness, is abnegation. So when we're talking about the upper worlds, the soul dipping in the river of fire is also an aspect of abnegation. They are dissolved mehatziyur shelahem, from their structure. See, it's this ability to be able to, that one's structure should be able to dissolve without harm. I'm speaking here of us, not of souls in the higher world, but our ability to be able to relate to something holy, and that our structure should be transformed in a non-harmful way. Because otherwise it could be in such a way that the structure gets transformed, then it can't come back into the world, it gets stuck at some higher level. That's the metaphor of climbing, and the peculiar fact that it's easier to climb up a mountain very often than to climb down. Climbing down is a more dangerous procedure very often. So it's easy, as it were, for the soul to climb up, and then it might be difficult for it to get back down. So it's that. So it's being able to dissolve, like from the weekday self to the Shabbat self, and then when it comes to the end of Shabbat, one makes Abdallah, and one comes back into the world. So that's the difficult bit. And that's, you know, and that's why we have the spices, because it's like, you know, it's difficult for the soul, and the spices is to remind. So this concept of dissolving out of one's structure, bedugmat hatfila b'nahadinur, like the dipping into the river of fire, shebein gehinum, it's between hell on the one hand, and the Gan Eden HaTachton, and the lower level of the Garden of Eden, the point being that the soul, after leaving the world, for most of us, we go for some time to Gehinnom. Why do we go to Gehinnom? Because we accumulated all kinds of dust and dirt and different impurities during our stay in the world. And that has to be cleansed and dissolved away. And then we're ready to go into the Garden of Eden. And the idea of people saying Kaddish for a departed person is to help in that whole process. And so then we come, so there's the river of fire, the Nahar Dinur, in between Gehinnom and the lower Gan Eden. Kedei lishkach chezu dahai alma, as it says in the Zohar, in order to forget the image of this world, the soul goes into this river of fire. The imlochein, now, what he's comparing that with is the process from weekday to Shabbat. That the transition from the weekday to Shabbat is a certain kind of forgetting the worldliness of the week. The imlochein, because if not that, harizim aval beloto, it confuses him or her. Ve'eni yachol lekabel ha'inyanim de'gan Eden ha'tachton, and the soul is not able to receive the spiritual aspects of the lower Garden of Eden. Similarly, when it's going from the lower Gan Eden to the higher Gan Eden, there also has to be the dissolution of that structure of the Gan Eden HaTachton of the lower Gan Eden. Kedei sheyuchal litalot ulekabel et hatziyur shel Gan Eden ha'elyon, so that the soul can go higher in order to rise and receive the image, the structure, or enter into the higher Gan Eden. Now, I propose missing out the next section. I think let's go on to section Hey, which is on page Yudbet. The point being that what he's explained in between is all kinds of subtleties relating to the Sfirot. What it's meant, lower Gan Eden, higher Gan Eden, Chochmah, Binah, two different aspects of Chochmah, of wisdom. So in other words, the process has been translated into a process among the Sfirot. But I think let's try to move to section Hey. V'yuvana inyan ba'avodah. Now this is always very interesting when in a discourse it takes something that on the one hand is a kind of, I mean, it hasn't been abstract completely, because it's talked about the process from the weekday to Shabbat, which is a very meaningful concept. If that was the whole idea that the discourse was trying to teach us, it would be a very significant thing. And then it's compared that to the higher Gan Eden, from the world to the Garden of Eden, and from the lower Garden of Eden to the higher Garden of Eden. And then it's translated all that into Sfirot, the language of the Sfirot. But now it's applying it to us in our particular struggles with our own self and passions. So that's in section Hey on page Yudbet. Now this can be understood in terms of avodah. Now avodah means service. And one of the ways of understanding the word avodah, which it says in some Hasidic texts, is the word is used for curing skins. Like you can slaughter an ox, and then the hide of the ox can be cured so that either it can be workable leather, which is one kind of thing it can become, or you can make it into parchment on which you can write a Torah scroll. So curing is a process of refining something which in itself is coarse, but which can be made into something much more subtle and sacred and able to be a vehicle for holiness. So the same term can be applied to us. We start off, like in babyhood and childhood, as a normal person with desires for different things, some of which are forbidden, and some of them, even if they aren't forbidden, they are coarsening in their effect. And then we try to refine ourselves. That's a very subtle process. So that's avodah. Dehine ketiv, now it's written, umaltem et ochlat levavchem, you should circumcise the foreskin of your heart. Now the foreskin of your heart is imagined like a kind of a membrane around the heart, which doesn't allow the heart to feel properly. It's not able to feel the gush of love of God, or of awe of God, because it's encased in this anesthetic membrane. So one verse says, you, each one of us, should circumcise our hearts. Uchtiv, and then there's another verse which says, Umal Hashem Elokecha et Lebavcha. Hashem, your God, will circumcise your heart. So in other words, one kind of circumcision we do, and the other is something done by God. When it's talking about God doing it, it doesn't mention the foreskin, as if we've already done that. We ourselves have done something about the really coarsest aspect of our heart, but then God, so to speak, raises us to an even higher level and circumcises us to on a higher dimension. So that's page Yud Bet, line 14. Ve'inyan b'zeh, now what this means is, dehine olat halev, the foreskin of the heart, hudavah ha'ma'akev, it's something that prevents, it blocks, she'otem u'mechaseh et halev, it stops up and covers the heart, doesn't let the heart feel. V'hainu, and that means she'af alpi, even though shegam kasher, that even when ani yeshena begaluta, this is a comment on a verse in Song of Songs. Ani yeshena, I'm asleep, v'libi er, but my heart is awake. A beautiful verse. So the way it's explained by the sages, ani yeshena, I'm asleep, begaluta, in exile. I, the Jewish people, or the Jewish individual, I'm asleep in exile. Mikol makom libi er, but nonetheless, my heart is awake. My heart is awake like Kadosh Baruch Hu, to God, l'torato, to His Torah, l'mitzvotav, and to His mitzvot. So despite the fact that on many levels, when we're in exile, we cannot see, we cannot hear, we cannot feel in the full sense of what it was like when there was a temple, and we would go to the temple, and it was the tremendous inspiration that was there, nonetheless, our heart is still awake to Torah, Mitzvah, Jewish identity in all kinds of ways. Uchelushon Baal HaGulam b'michtavo, as the previous Rebbe who was released yesterday and today, the 12th and 13th of Tammuz, are this joy that after he was put in prison because of his activities to keep Judaism alive in Russia in the time of the Soviet. The time of the Soviets after the Bolshevik Revolution, and they tried to ban religion, and the people who were most forceful about banning religion were the Jewish communists. called the Yevsektsia, the Jewish section of the Communist Party, and they were very thorough in trying to get rid of every kind of Jewish school and things like that, and they arrested rabbis and had them tortured and killed. It was a terrible thing. And the previous Rebbe set up a system. He went, he took a map of Russia, and he took a group of his Hasidim. He said, I want 9 people to step forward so that with me there'll be 10. And I want to divide this map into 10 parts. And each person will take responsibility for one part of Russia. And Bensi Shem Tov, Olav Shalom, Rabbi Bensi and Shem Tov, who was the person who began Lubavitch in England, so the previous Rebbe writes about him in a letter many years later. As you might imagine, Bensi was the first one to step forward. He was like a dynamo of a man, a spiritual dynamo, and a physical one as well.
very that was Mrs. Sudak's father.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
She's very, wow.
High energy.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's a very, very remarkable person. So, so then he began running round Russia, preserving Judaism. There's an academic article about that. Preserving religion in the land of revolution. So an academic article. So someone wrote, they did a lot of research into what was happening. So then they worked out that he was doing that, so they arrested him. And they condemned him to death. And thank God that there was international protest of different kinds. And he was released. And he was released yesterday and today. The 12th, 13th of Tammuz. So he then wrote a letter, line 19. Shekol ish Yisrael, every single Jew, man and woman, gam asher b'shem Yisrael yechuneh, doesn't have to be a religious person. They just called a Jew. Levavot tamimim Hashem b'torato, his or her heart is pure, is dedicated to Hashem and His Torah. The only thing is, harei yachol yo, but it might be shehalev yeh mechuse ba'ola, that the heart will be covered with a foreskin, the heart will be covered with a membrane, so it doesn't feel how dedicated it is to God. So according to this theory, every single Jew, the most extreme anti-religious Jew, is nonetheless dedicated to God. The only thing is, their heart might be covered with this membrane. V'asiba leze, and the reason why there's this covering, he lo rak mitzad davar ha'isur chas v'shalom. Now, you can look at this in different ways. You can talk about the person who feels and talks as if they are very remote from Jewish life, Jewish practice, or you can talk about someone who thinks that they're a chassid as well. So, he lo rak mitzad davar ha'isur chas v'shalom. We don't have to speak, it's not only something forbidden. So some people do forbidden things. And what happens then? Shenaseh asur v'kashur b'day ha'l'umat zeh. Through doing forbidden things, we get entangled with the opposite realm. There's the realm of holiness and there's the realm of unholiness. The opposite realm, a mirror image of this world. The world of klipot. And a person can get tied up in that. That's what the word asur. Asur means forbidden, it also means tied up. So he's using it in the sense that when we get involved with a forbidden activity, we're tying ourselves up in something negative. But it doesn't have to be a negative, it doesn't have to be a forbidden thing. Afilu, and here we come to the idea of a person being coarsened, even though they're not actually doing anything wrong. You can consider this person a very observant person. He or she is counted among the religious people. Afilo dvar heter. But it could be a permitted thing. Avol naaseh l'shem ta'ava. Now, here he's going into subtleties of the spiritual quest, of trying to transcend pleasure for pleasure's sake. So the person is doing something permitted, but they're doing it just as a pleasure. Sheyored benichlal lefi shah, temporarily, what happens is they descend and are absorbed. Bara gamur, Subishlosh Klipot Hatmeot, in the three impure Klipot, Kambavor Batanya, as it explains in Tanya in chapters 7. So there's the idea that a person could be doing something permitted, but they could be doing it in such a way, with such a lust and such a sort of earthly passion for it, that it makes them forget. It coarsens them.
Like drinking alcohol.
Well, drinking alcohol could be taken to an extreme which takes it beyond the permitted level. But it certainly could be. I mean, yeah. In itself...
Even though it's permitted according to halacha, it's still descended to the three completely unclean klipot.
If the person is doing it with a passion for a pure passion for the enjoyment without any spiritual dimension.
Even if they've made a brocha over the alcohol.
The thing with alcohol is that it's the alcohol is a risky it's a kind of a risky part. But even, let's say, it's not that they're drinking large quantities of alcohol, but they have a tremendous... I have a friend, he loves whiskey. What does it mean he loves whiskey? The whiskey he loves, I can't get for him. Because the minimum would be £150 a bottle. You know? That's the cheapest, you know, end of the bottom of the ladder range.
Really,
and it goes up to, you know, £3,000 a bottle. You know, that's real whiskey. Now, he is a charming person who helps a lot of people, does a lot of good, and has a good heart, you know, and is a warm, wonderful person. But one can imagine someone else who's so focused on such delightful whiskey that it coarsens their sense for the sacred.
Okay.
You see, that's so it doesn't have to drink a lot of it.
Well, I mean, I'm happy with wine for £10 a bottle. I'm not expressing.
A legam kasher over the page. Okay, the Rebbe's going into more subtle things. Don't forget, he's saying this to a group of Hasidim in 1965. Among them is Rabbi Lou.
Oh, really?
Yeah, and wow. he's talking to very, very spiritual people.
1965? Gosh, okay.
He's talking to very spiritual people, or he's trying to make them spiritual. So you could say even people who don't enjoy the world, they're not doing it for enjoyment. They're only eating what they need health-wise in order to survive. But the only problem is he doesn't have a focus that the reason why he's eating is for the sake of heaven. So hine, as it explains in Tanya in chapter 7, since what he's eating is a physical thing, that coarsens the heart. That in itself has to be awake to God and his Torah and his mitzvah. And whatever it is, the activity, eating or whatever, it conceals shezeu inyan orlat halev, and that is the foreskin of the heart. Val zenema, and about this it says, umaltem atem ba'atzmechem, you should circumcise the membrane of the heart, et orlat halev, haynu she'inyan zen nitan l'chol echad ve'echad, is given to every single person, she'b'chol eid v'chol sha'a, that each individual b'yuchol to, it's within our power, lo rak lizahem midva yisur, not only to be careful of something forbidden, but also tavat heter, also desires for permitted things, V'afilu shelo tiye etzlo achilas tam, and even that one's eating should not just be eating ele be'ofen, but in such a way, d'chol ma'asecha yiyu l'shem shamayim. All your actions should be for the sake of heaven, u'b'chol d'rochecha da'eyu, and with all your pathways you should know God. So that means the Rebbe is pushing people to try to become something more spiritual. Now, we could say that most people are pretty far from this bar. Yeah, the Rebbe is, as it were, putting a bar to jump over, and most people can't do it. It's, they eat, they enjoy, whatever it is, different aspects of life. But they are aware that there is an approach to life which is more spiritual. And occasionally one meets Hasidim, or one hears stories about Hasidim where you could actually see that in those people. They always had a sort of a lean quality about them and a sense of no self-indulgence. Now, no self-indulgence is on many levels. It's not just food, it's relationships with people, it's attitude to life, it's eating, sleep, it's all kinds of dimensions. Those people are pretty rare. They were always rare. I think they're much rarer now than 40 years ago. But they are rare. But the idea is there. And the idea, well, it can promote a sigh in us. There's a song which goes like this. It's in Yiddish. I might have sung it to you before. I'll say the words first so we can understand. Essen esst sich. Eating eats by itself. In other words, you go a couple of hours without eating, you feel hungry, you want to eat. Trinken trinkt sich. Drinking drinks by itself. Was soll man tun, als es davent sich nicht? What should we do that there's no similar drive to pray? You can go a week without, but there's no, system in the body that suddenly says, oh, you must pray. You know, there's a system making us eat and drink. But most people don't have the same kind of push making the person feel they must pray. Essen esst sich, eating eats by itself. Schlafen schlaft sich. Sleeping sleeps by itself. You get tired, you fall asleep. Was umetan, as es lernt sich nicht. What should we do that there is no drive, physical drive, to make us learn Torah? We have to think to ourselves, oh, I better try and learn some Torah. So the song goes like this. It's a sort of plaintive song. Essen esst sich, trinken trinkt sich. Was soll man tun, als es davent sich nicht? Essen esst sich, schlafen schlaft sich. Was soll man tun, als es lernt sich nicht? Ay, 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 ay. So that is, you can probably find that on YouTube, SNS. But that is a quest to have a different kind of response to the world. That instead of being able to, you know, we have these drives making us eat and drink and sleep. What about a drive to help another person?
That's the hardest thing, isn't it?
All right, so it's a long discourse, and we've only gone a little bit of the way, but it's touching something which is really touching this realm of holiness, and we just have a little look through the door. So next week, Bezrat Hashem, is the final